You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Hi, wide camera. Hi, close up. What's going on? Yeah, you guys can watch this too. Be nice if you go to YouTube and subscribe. But, you know, hey, I don't want to ask for too much. How are you? How's everybody doing? I feel like I say that a lot, but what else are you going to say? Like, all right, let me just get into it. I guess I could just get into it. You know, I was thinking, the anxiety kind of creeps in. We talk about that. And the busier I am, I wrote this down in my journal today because it's just so true. Why don't I just keep like reading, saying this to myself? The busier you stay, the less time you have to think about the future. So the more time you have to dwell and go, oh my gosh, what's tomorrow going to bring? You're digging a hole, man. But you don't stop digging it. That's what we do. We just keep digging it, man. But yeah, I feel like, I'm definitely staying on the routine for the most part. Trying to work out here, trying to, walk in the dogs, dealing with my Patreon. It's a lot of work. And, Ryan's not here, obviously, across from me. But the episodes, I hope you're digging. I'm loving them. I really am. In fact, there's some great ones coming up in the future. So I hope you listen to those and all the other ones that you may not know the actor or singer or whatever. Andrew Santino is fantastic. And maybe a lot of you didn't know him. And if you haven't, maybe you should go back and listen because he's it was a good guest. And before that was Mental Health Week. And we had Dr. Drew on before that. So I kind of threw out some things to maybe help you guys out there, help myself, old therapists of mine. And the response was overwhelming. So I hope you take the time, all of you. Boy, would that be nice to just subscribe and write a review. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. I think it's at Inside of You Podcast or at Inside of You Pod, depending on where you're at. We have the Inside of You online store. A lot of great stuff. New shirts, sweatshirts. Patreon is amazing. I love my my patrons. They're so supportive and loving. And I did a stage it last week. And Rob, Danson, and I played a bunch of covers and originals and had a blast. So be on the lookout for the next one. Be on the lookout on my Instagram or Twitter. And, they're doing like group Zooms with me and Tom Welling and Kristen Krug. And you can get a Zoom with us and things like that. So it's all part of it. I think there's a Galaxy Con is I'm working something out. And then there's Informa that I'm working something out. They haven't announced it, but I don't give a shit. I'm telling you right now. Fuck it. It's going to be happening soon. I think July 12th is the first one. The other Patreon with John Heater, Napoleon Dynamite, my good buddy, we love horror movies, as I've told you. It's called Where Have All the Good Horror Movies Gone? And we just got shirts available, and it's so much fun. Some tiers have a Zoom with us, and we talk about movies, which ones we're going to watch. We have a rating system. It's hilarious. People are really digging it, and I appreciate all the support. It's a lot of fun. Also, you could write fan mail. Just know it could take a long time because it's hard for me to get to, so it could take a month, 2 months, couple months down the road. And I usually check it once, every once in a while, and I have someone who helps me, but it's I'm not getting much help here. But just go to hello@insideofyoupodcast.com. Before we get into our guest, who's unbelievable, and if you're here for Tom Cavanaugh, God bless you. Hey, he's fantastic. Such a big heart. So much to say, so self-deprecating and sweet, and from The Flash and Ed, and great guy. But before we do that, why don't we get an intro to one of his cast members on Flash, and that's Danielle Panabaker. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
All right, I'm good. I'm well. I was thinking about you. You got a new baby. How old's the little baby now?
About 2 months old.
Is it difficult? Are you going to say it's easy, but it's not? You're going to be one of those?
I mean, there's good and bad to this. We had our child in the time of COVID, which is scary and, not the world we thought we'd bring this baby into, but and also none of our friends or family have been able to meet the baby. So that's been challenging. But the flip side is my husband's home. He's working from home right now. And so he's been able to spend more time than he ever would have.
Right. I mean, it was the end of the season anyway for The Flash, right?
Kind of. I finished my work on The Flash. Ironically, my last episode was season 19, or my last episode was episode 19. They were supposed to film 3 more episodes, but they didn't finish them because production got shut down. So coincidentally, my last episode was also the last episode of Flash season 6.
All right. So Tom Cavanaugh, he's on the show today. I've only heard great things. I've seen in articles that you said where it's like he's been through the trenches with me and he's just like, he's seen me at my worst. And he's just like, he really is he's so easy to, you know, easy to talk to, isn't he?
He's an amazing guy. I'm so glad you guys got the chance to talk. You know, in a lot of ways, he's like, I don't want to say he's our father figure on set, but like he's our team captain. I feel like everybody goes to him when they have issues and like, what should we be doing about this? He's got, as I'm sure you'll see, an unbelievable amount of energy. And I truly don't know where it all comes from.
Yeah, I usually envy those people. I'm like, how do they have so much energy? How do they do it? Do you ever wonder, like, gosh, I wish I had that much energy?
I do wonder. I ask him. He also has 4 kids who I'm sure keep him very busy as well. He's just really impressive.
Cool. Well, you know, I just wanted to see how you're doing. I know you had the baby. I know you've been like, it's, you know, some don't ever let your anybody say children of the quarantine. I saw that. I was like, children of the quarantine.
But, you know, it's funny. Tom was, I remember it was probably season 1. It might have been in the pilot, but we were sitting in the Cortex filming a scene and I was asking Tom about his kids. And he looked at me and he said, do you want kids? And I sort of smiled and said, someday. And here it is, you know, season 6 has come to be.
Wow. That's kind of a blessing in a weird, dark way that you get to spend so much time with your kid now and the baby and
again,
kind of,
yeah,
it's weird, right?
Way more maternity leave than I ever thought I would have. It's kind of like the whole world's on maternity leave. Everyone's got to stay home. You can't see anyone.
Yeah.
You don't do anything.
So, your mom hasn't held the baby.
No, none of our family.
Isn't that insane? That's insane.
It's really.
I mean, it's obviously. It's really,
and that's the sad part is that our family, you know, hasn't been able to intimately be a part of this yet. And obviously, you know, we're looking forward to the time when they can be.
They will. Things will get better. Yes. They always get better.
And, you know, not to be too Pollyanna, but also thank goodness for Skype and FaceTime and all of those things that have made it possible for us to communicate. And
it wouldn't have been that easy if I said, hey, Danielle, could you just come over for 5 minutes for this little intro? You're like, no. Well, anyway, this is great. This is it. I just wanted to. You seem like.
You don't need to know anything else about Tom?
Well, have you ever seen him flip out? He's just too nice.
I've never seen Tom flip out. No, he's one of those people who you can tell he's really upset because he gets very quiet. I've seen him get frustrated and disappointed. He was directing our 100th episode, which was incredible. And something unfortunate happened to him on that episode. And he just was really quiet. He didn't get angry at anyone. Like he just was like, okay, and moved on. But when Tom is silent, you know, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. Do you get silent too, or do you just go, what the F?
I will say this last episode that I directed, I've now directed twice on Flash.
Unbelievable.
In large part, thanks to Tom. And just getting to see him the way he, you know, watching him the first time, and he was so generous with me and so supportive. And, you know, the second time I was pregnant and directing and secretly pregnant, and I lost my temper once on that. But that's generally not how I am.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I figured you'd get kind of quiet and just kind of.
Yeah, I think I definitely have like a very intense, mean voice that like, you know, I mean. Business.
Does it shake? Does it shake a little bit? It's like, all right, this is what that's going to happen.
If I'm upset, then yes, I'm sure my voice shakes.
Yeah, it's not a pleasant feeling. I don't like being angry. So everything else is good though. You're home. You're being healthy. You're respecting the quarantine, and that's that.
Oh yeah, we're super crazy about quarantine here. Obviously, with a newborn at home, so you know, we take everything really seriously. And then you know, it's sort of a waiting game of. I'm lucky to know that I will have a job to go back to, and it's just kind of waiting until it's safe to go back. I am looking forward to going to Vancouver, though, because it's, you know, it's pretty safe up there. They don't have that many cases.
What's your favorite episode, finally, with season 6?
I mean, the episode I directed. It was great. It was a James Bond-themed episode.
Right.
I got a great script. I was so lucky. And I think that one's my favorite.
I like how you say that, because I remember that, too. It's like, oh! I got a great script to direct as opposed to the mediocre or crappy scripts. Because like, look, people don't understand, but there are a lot. I mean, if you're writing 22 episodes a year, you're going to have probably 5 or 6 great ones, probably 5 or 6 pretty good ones. And the rest fall into the okay to crap category.
It's true. It's hard. You know, fans, I think sometimes get frustrated when episodes, you know, don't move the plot forward as much as they like, but we're doing the best we can. Like we used to have 23 episodes a season, you know, and you're still sort of confined. You only have so much money. And, you know, you have some of the bigger, more spectacle episodes where there's really a lot of money and a ton of special effects spent. And then sometimes you don't spend as much money. You've got a simpler script.
Awesome. Well, I think you're amazing. And I love talking to you. And I can't wait to meet the baby. So someday.
We can't wait.
Yeah. And I can't wait.
Yes. Hopefully. hopefully soon.
It will be. All right. Take care of yourself.
Hopefully tennis soon too.
Give love to Hayes.
I will.
Rutherford B. Do you know who that was?
Yes, of course.
He was president. But,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
We looked for president's names to name our child.
Rutherford Panabaker Robbins. No, it's Rutherford. I'm glad you didn't go with Rutherford.
We did not go with Rutherford.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon.
She's honestly so sweet. Sometimes you look at people and you're like, how can they possibly be that nice? And you're thinking, maybe at home, maybe she gets really upset. I don't think so. I'm a good judge of character, I think. I don't know. I got a letter to read at the end of this show. I'm going to mention all my patrons at the end. Camp Rosie, which is scheduled for October 31st, which is my summer camp. I don't know yet. So hang on. We'll see what happens. Also, Inside of You podcast, live podcast with Zach Levi, scheduled for July 2nd in Austin, Texas at the North Door. That's going to be rescheduled, obviously, with what's going on. So be on the lookout. It will happen, hopefully, later in the year. But why don't we just get right into it? Also, we have one of Tom's old castmates from the show, Ed, and one of his best friends, who might say a word. So you might want to listen to this. Let's get inside Tom Cavanaugh. It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience. You know, here's the thing. I was a little nervous interviewing you.
We haven't done
today.
It yet.
Well, before. And the reason is because I feel like when I interview somebody who I know has it together, hang on. You know, I look at you and you're like, you know, I hear all these great things about you. I talked to Danielle Panabaker. She did an intro on the show and talked about you. And it's like, you know, you're just a great guy. She talks about, like, you know, when she's in the trenches and your guys are there and you're getting your hands dirty and she's emotional and this. And she says you've seen her at her worst and you're just the best to be around. And then you see you get four kids and you're married, you have stability, you're a likable guy. I'm like, God, why couldn't I be that? I always compare myself to people who have their shit together.
Sure. Listen, it's a funny thing, right? I'll tell you a quick story about that, because it's always resonated with me from the time I was like in high school. I was walking with my dad and I was talking to him about how I was like getting toward being a senior in high school. And I was like, hey, Dad, you know, when I was starting out and I was a freshman, those seniors seemed like men. They seemed like they had everything together and they knew the world and they just knew how to navigate stuff and they were smart and they were funny and they had unwritten languages and they just seemed like men. They seemed like they had their stuff together. I said, now I'm getting there and I still feel like the freshman. I still feel like I haven't learned a single thing and I feel like it's just an act and I don't have my stuff together. And my dad, we were walking down this leafy street. He was a dean of a college. We were walking down the leafy street toward the college and he stopped and he was like, oh, I've been waiting for that feeling for my whole life. He said, oh, I said, all the professors at the college, they seem to know what they're doing, but I don't feel that way. And I feel like I'm faking it. And it, you know, I was like a young teenager and that just stuck with me. And so that's the answer to your question. It's like, you have it every inch is together and probably way more than I do.
No way.
Or my peers or anybody else. You know what I mean?
You don't listen.
We're all just fighting that fight.
You don't listen to the show, obviously, because I don't have it together. I'm constantly trying to get it. You know, there's that scene in Christmas Vacation.
I'm getting it together. I do listen to the show. You do have it. Like, that's the whole thing. Part of the massive thing is to go, like, here's my flaws, right?
Yeah.
If you can start going, yeah, well, you know, if you have to, like, pave that shit over, pardon my language.
No, you can swear.
That stuff over, right? Then you're never going to. You're never, ever going to have it together, right? Part of the whole thing is to, like, go, okay, well, I don't have it together. Those guys seem like seniors. I don't know what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, Christmas Vacation, there's that scene with Clark Griswold and his dad. And he sits there and the whole house is a mess and it's just effed, you know? And he goes, Dad, how did you do it? How did you do all those Christmases and all the... And he says, well, I had a little help from Jack Daniels. And that just kind of sums it up for you. You know, you think dad's got it together. He doesn't have it together.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's so true.
I met you, I don't know if you remember this, but I don't know if you, in the backyard of Michael Ian Black, his house.
You were talking to Pencotto and I think maybe Panabaker and stuff. And I was like, I know Michael. I mean, we've crossed paths. If here's the funny thing about you and I is, you know, we're ancient dudes. Who, you know, who are still employable, you know, for a variety of solid reasons.
I want to know those reasons. Go get What's back that? To that. You'll get back to the reasons, but keep going. Sure.
But part of that thing is like, there's not so many people like that. If you're fortunate enough to have that kind of thing, that's just a wonderful thing. And then you cross paths with those guys. You know, you like, when you're like, oh, I remember the backyard. I remember the bocce. I remember the van drive. I remember all this stuff. It's like, yeah, sure. That's like, yeah, he's great. He's great. I know him. And what's funny is we spent probably logged together personally side by each, maybe like an hour of our lifetimes. And yet it's like, yeah, no, I know that guy. He's great.
Right. That's sort of how Hollywood is in a way. But like, I think when you meet people, like you're like, you remember if they were nice, if you liked them, or you remember if you didn't. Right. You remember those people.
Right.
I'm sure there's people in your life that you go, whether you've worked with them or not, that you've gone, yeah, that guy.
Sure.
Even if you didn't know him that well, it's that guy. How do you deal with that guy? Like in your being on The Flash, being on, you know, when you're on Ed, you've done so much shit, Broadway and all that stuff. When you deal with personality differences, when you just meet somebody, is it difficult to sort of be cordial and fun and nice because you're that guy? Or do you sometimes have to, do you ever flip out on somebody?
I don't know. I mean, do you? Like, I don't know that. The interesting thing about your thing is like, your show is like, you know, your questions, there's a preset that it's like, you're going to have like self-knowledge. Grant came on your thing and, you know, I thought that was a great episode. Right. And I think it resounded with a lot of people that know him, or those people that don't know him that are going to like go, hey, Grant is, you know, like an idol of mine, or Grant is, you know, the greatest thing. And he, you know, he talks about, you know, social anxiety and that kind of stuff. And it's like that there's the common thread through all that is self-knowledge, you know? And so, that specific question, I'm like, I could give you an answer and go like, this is what I do, Michael. I do this when I meet that guy.
Right.
But largely, I think the first thing I go is like, that guy's a dick, you know? And then I'm like, I'm going to avoid that guy. Right. And there's no real strategy. It's like, it's a read and react. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I do.
And then when you're forced, here's a perfect example. If I don't have to spend time with that guy, I'm not going to spend time with that guy.
Right.
Right. And I'm not going to say, listen, the reason I'm not spending time with you is because I do not like you. You do not have a sunny countenance. You're indulgent. Right. But I won't do that. I'll go hang out with you, you know, and we'll just go have our time unless I'm forced into, you know, being with that person because we're doing a play or, you know.
But that's what I'm sort of getting at is like, you know, when you work with someone, because you're always Mr. Nice Guy, you're always the guy that, the leader. I mean, look at you. You directed the 100th episode of Flash. They gotta love you and know that you're stable and you could do the shit. So that's why. So a guy like you, I wonder. That's why the question was. Sometimes it comes out weird, but the thought was, good guy, got his shit together on set. Everybody respects him. Is there ever that moment where he's just like, dude, shut the fuck up?
Oh, yeah, sure, of course. But you know, I think part of the thing is like that. The idea that like, well, you know, we all have those flaws. My experience has been largely when the guy's a dick, there's some way to work it through. And usually that way is like, look, I'm just telling you guy to guy, person to person, you know, if it's a female, if it's a male, it doesn't really, it's not a gender specific thing. It's like, here's how I feel. That's the bottom line for me. And like Danielle Grant can say all these things. Like if you say, I think this is how I feel. No one can say, no, you don't, you know? And I say, I feel like we're not getting along. I feel like you don't like me and I'm having trouble with this kind of thing. And he's just like, look, I feel this way. Oftentimes, largely my experience has been, there's some way in, some way to connect. Rarely is the dick just a dick. It's like the time when you're like, you've worked 16 hours and, you know, someone's like, someone yells out, "Hey, Lex," or whatever, and you just don't have time for it. And he's like, "Yeah." And then their next day, going to that guy was a dick. He's just like, he's waved me off. You know what I mean?
Right.
We won't let those things. You're not like, you're not a dick. And there's one of those things where you're like, all right, well, there's a way in to connect a little bit when you have to. Has been my experience, you know?
Yeah, we're all human.
And then if the person is just simply a dick, it's easy to fool them.
Right.
You know? You can like say, here's what I need. This is going to be great. You're going to be amazing. You know?
And, the old Jedi mind trick. The old, hey, you're so awesome. Oh, my God. And they're like, wow.
Well, I literally look at the leadership in America and you're just kind of like, look, right? There seems to be the way in, right? Is never like, right? They're just going to go like, oh, you're bad. You disagree with me. You're bad. But if right. people are like, yeah, no, like there's reason and compliments and there's, you know, There's ways in. That's human.
Yeah. It's all insecurity too. I think it stems from insecurity when somebody's, for instance, when I did Smallville, the pilot episode, the guy who plays my dad, Tony Award winning, John Glover, yeah. I thought he just didn't like me. I was like, wow, he doesn't like me. This is so uncomfortable. I want him to like me. I've always been the guy I want you to like me. What can I do to make you like me? The one guy in the room that doesn't like me, maybe two, I want them to like me. And then, so at the end, I just said, it wasn't until the series got picked up, I started talking to him. I'm like, yeah, I just, you did not like me in the pilot, huh? He goes, what? I go, I just felt like you didn't like me. He's like, oh, of course. I was so nervous. They had called me 2 days before to do this. And I'm doing my John Glover impression. And, you know, and that was sort of the way it was. By the way, you do impressions. And when I saw this interview with you that I loved because it's so true and really actors get it, but you really gave some perspective to the outside world looking in, like those guys like Christian Bale, when they do Batman, when they play superheroes, when they talk a certain way, it's so true. Cause I'm like, I always think I got to play Lex cooler than this. I can't be Rosenbaum. Sure. Fuck. No one sure. wants Rosenbaum as Lex Luthor. I can't be like, hey Clark, we should go fucking, I don't know, driving my Porsche. Who says Porsche? Yeah. And then, so there was sort of like a reserved kind of thing that I wasn't used to doing that I got used to doing. It wasn't that I completely went, okay, Tom, here's what we're doing. But you have, tell me about that. Tell the audience who hasn't heard that theory you have.
Yeah, I think that was a Rolling Stone interview. And part of it was like the conditions of being, because, you know, you and I both play iconic. I play the Reverse Flash for the people who don't know on the show, which is like, that's the arch enemy of the Flash. The Flash is played winningly by Grant Gustin, and the Reverse Flash is played serviceably by Tom Cavanaugh. And, you know, they're arch enemies. The Reverse Flash is the Joker to the Flash's Batman. And when you're playing like one of those arch enemies, you know, there's a catalog of, this is how we do it as part of the Pantheon. And the thing that I used to come into is the debacle of 10 yards versus 40 yards. Because if you're down the street and I'm like, you're never going to catch me alive, Michael. You know, I land and boom, I do the superhero thing, boom. Do you remember, this is an aside, you're going to love this. There was a time in the late 90s, early aughts, when they were doing Michael Rosenbaum and you were on NBC, right? And they were doing a promo for you. They wanted, you remember they did all those promos for all that? They wanted you and your co-star, when they were doing your solo, they wanted you to do this. Ready and action. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. And they'd slow it down. They'd even slow it down a little more.
It bled out from the entertainment industry into sports so that Drew Brees, quarterback for the New Orleans Saints. And it'd be like, he'd have a ball and he'd be like, I remember watching all like Eli Manning and all these guys just be like, when they like write their number, like just kind of looking up, right? And it's sort of, it's still there, but it used to be at an 85% barometer. Now it's kind of comes in around 30. But there was that thing where they also like, they did this too when it was, you know, when you were like, you would like, kind of that kind of thing away from the
just kind of swing back and forth.
You remember that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like, you felt so stupid doing these promos.
And then you kind of would do this like, oh, wait, oh, oh, you know, you do the like the spin around.
I'm sitting on a chair, a spinning chair, spinning around. Yeah, yeah.
Completely. They were on that. You're on a turntable, and you're like, and they were going to cut away, but there was that always that great moment when like, they didn't cut away, and you were still like,
still kind of looking when you're.
And so for these kind of like stereotypical moments to break out of, it's very difficult, as you know, to break out of them because this is how it's done in the comic book, right?
Right.
Rarely is the guy, you know, like who's just like completely, hey, Clark, you know, because Clark's like, nah, you know what? You're not a worthy opponent. I'm Superman.
Even from 40 feet away, but you think, but no, because you did this whole thing where you're like, someone's yelling and you're like, or.
Yeah. So here's what it is. So I'd be like, if it was you and I facing off, I'd be like, I'd land, bang. And I'd be like, you'll never take me alive, Michael. And then you'd be like, you want some fries? No, I said, you'll never take me alive, Michael. Well, you need a ride or a cycle? No, you'll never take me alive, Michael. I'm so sorry. He's like, no, never mind. Just never mind. You know? And that was the guy. The guy that I was doing on Rolling Stone was—he was basically ordering sushi. He was ordering food in a restaurant. I'm sorry, you'll have that. You all just have water.
But it's cool. That's the cool voice. And when you're far away, I don't know how many times I've said that where I'm talking to, you know, you're right, Clark across the room, and he's like, and I'm just like, Clark.
And they could never hear you.
No, they're like, what are you saying, dude? Right, I'm not cool. When they air this, it won't be cool. It'll be cool now. And how many times have you seen? I've had guest stars come on, and they're even quieter than anybody I've ever heard. And I'm talking to them. I'm like, I need you to check up on this scientist. I want you to check him on. And I was like, sir, we haven't found any information. I can't hear what you're saying. And he kept doing it. I'm like, oh, fuck, this guy's going to be terrible. And then you see it, and you're like, God, that guy was great. He was so intense. I got to do the lower register voice.
It's the magic of the 100 to 150 millimeter lens, where they're like, I can be way over here, but on TV, it's going to be like this. And I can be as quiet as I want, and they're still going to hear it. Right? It's just like, that's the movie magic.
Yeah. I mean, because look, Broadway, you've done a lot of theater. You did Ed, you've done movies, and now you're on Flash, and now you get to play a bad guy, and then you get to play a bunch of other characters. Dr. Wells, who's like different personalities, right? He's all over the place. He's in different universes, this character. So you could play sort of nice and sort of like you just, do you like this stuff as much as you like the Broadway, as much as you like the straight drama, or is it just another thing that you're experiencing?
I wouldn't grade it in comparison in any way, only because this is not a politically correct answer. And I think you understand why. This is because I proceed from gratitude to have any job. I really do.
Sure.
It's not like, that is not like a blanket statement of like, you know, because one of the things that, especially I think you and I know this, and I think it's lost on people that have success at 21, and they'll get there because how could you have any basis of comparison? But the idea that, you know, proceeding from gratitude for the employment or the specific job that you have is a huge thing, because I think a lot of people go, well, Michael is just, he's just dancing from this show to that show, to this movie, to that play, to this kind of thing. And Tom's doing the same. And I think what people miss is the giant in capitalized letters, will they have you? And most of the time they won't. They want somebody better than me. They want somebody is more of a cachet. They want Brad Pitt. They want, and that's kind of a fanciful example.
You know, it's like, that's the way it is. That's just the way
but
Hollywood
they
is.
They do want Brad Pitt, but I'm trying to come up with an example. It's like, if they can get me, they're also kind of like, well, maybe we could get Matthew Perry, or, you know what I mean? Like there's some other element that's kind of close, but, you know, like is a better get for them. It's a better splash when they make an announcement. And we run into that all the time. And I think, when I watch somebody who's not me, like you, I think he's just going from gig to gig. Or I look at, you know, movie stars. I'm friends with, this is a name drop, but he's doing such great stuff right now, John Krasinski.
Oh, and, dude, by the way, I'm a huge horror fan. I'm huge. And Quiet Place was just one of the few that I really liked. I mean, I don't like a lot of horror these days, and that was really good.
The interesting thing about that is one of the whole things, like when we talked about directing, one of the main things I try to do is, and it's obvious because every director I think wants to do this, but you want to show and not tell. But that movie, the whole basis of that movie was show, don't tell, because they're not, you can't talk.
Right.
And so it's so interesting, right? Like oftentimes when you're a young actor, like, can you communicate what you're trying, what's going on in this scene without using words? And you should be able to do that by and large. But then of course we do superhero shows where there's a massive amount of writing about feelings and people are so there's so much self-knowledge. You run into something like A Quiet Place, it can be jarring because they did such a magnificent job. These characters were so rich and so fulfilled, and yet they didn't say anything.
I would have died. I would have died in the first minute, not being able to say anything. Even if I wasn't supposed to die, I still would have died. Rosenbaum, you can't talk. Well, I have to.
there's a meeting amongst the producers that night, like, hey, so I know he survives to page 68, but we were thinking,
get rid of him.
What if we kill Michael now in the first scene? Would that be cool? Like, I know it's a rewrite, but we can do that.
Plus, the other actors can't hear him when they're acting. He's like far away. He's whispering like he's playing a superhero or something. I just don't get it. What is he doing?
What's he doing over there? Well, this is what I do on my show.
But you were
The answer to your question is like, you know, I don't have. I know it seems pat, but it really is true. I never would have expected, you know, to be putting on in the age of superhero, to be one of the people who gets to put on the villain suit. You know what I mean? That would never have been, you know, when I started out professionally, I never thought, and at one point, you know, I hope to play Joker or, you know, a Reverse Flash or something like that. And so I have a massive amount of gratitude for that, because, you know, that could have gone to a myriad of humans. And I, you know, that became one of those things like, will they have you? They would have me for that one. And so I think for most of the roles that you get, you're just like, oh, that's great. I got this role. I remember my first Broadway show, I'm Canadian. I got cast out of Canada. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. You know how
was it Urinetown?
That was a play, and I think it was around the turn. Our boys were just coming home from war. Like, it was, you know, a national nightmare was over, and that was a show called Shenandoah about the Civil War. A musical starring Hal Linden from Barney Miller fame, and went on to be voiced by the inimitable John Cullum. Interesting enough, John Cullum and I did another Broadway show years later, and John Cullum was the lead of that one too. You know, he's a massive talent, and you know, the interesting thing is about that is, when the New York, the Broadway producers came on their search through America and then through Canada, you know, the advantage I had was they didn't know anybody. So in the echelon of Canadian actors, I was at the very bottom, but they didn't know who the guys at the top were either. So it was for a brief moment in the audition room, it was a fair fight. And you know, I got that job, and the gratitude for getting that job, going to Broadway, you know, you have the elation when they're like, hey, guess what, Michael, you got the role. And it's like, it lasts for a little bit, and then you get there, and then there's obstacles to overcome, and you're like, this guy's an idiot. Or there's, you know, something doesn't go well, and you're like, it all plunges away. Like, I remember playing basketball and going, I just want to make the team. And then after you make the team, that's all you wanted. You just want to be part of the team. And after a while, I was like, well, I want to play. And after that, you went, I want to start. And after that, well, I want to get my point. You know, like, it's just that whole Michael Jordan thing, if you have a competitive nature. But what's interesting about that Broadway thing, and I know I'm talking about myself way too much.
No, this is why I want you to.
The interesting thing about that Broadway thing is that elation lasted. It's still there. You know what I mean? Normally that stuff goes away, and then you like start taking stuff for granted. I'd be walking down from 72nd Street where I live down to like the theater, and I'd be like, this is ridiculous. You just kept waiting for someone to go like, okay, all right. You're just at the stage door going like, yeah, I don't know. And you'd be like, yeah, I know.
You really felt like, so do you feel like that even today, or is that kind of that feeling that you don't feel that anymore? Is it more like a joke? Do you still get excited about going on the set of The Flash? Or does it become just kind of like work? Because it is a lot of work. I mean, a lot of people say, no, I have fun every day. But the reality is, do you? I mean,
if you talk to the people that I work with, I think a lot, and I think a lot of the things, yeah, I think they do. I think I'm aware that they say nice things, and I'm aware that, you know, Hartley says, oh, you wear the C, which is like for a captain. And that's largely because for people like you've been through enough that you've seen enough situations. You can offer advice on this thing because you've seen it before and that thing. And so the short answer to the question is, yeah, that's still there. And the reason, one of the main reasons that's there is because when you don't job hop from job to job to job. You have these valleys and people don't see it. And then it's like, hey, George Clooney hasn't worked for 2 years, but you don't know that because he's George Clooney and you don't know what kind of things he's been through. And it's the same thing for every actor. It's like, oh, now you're doing Flash. So that's great. But what they don't know is that you had these valleys between where you're like, I got to make my rent. I got to feed a family, you know, and those things, the longer your career is, the more you run into those valleys. And every actor is going to run into those things because, you know, even for the huge movie stars, I read this thing that, again, to talk about Clooney, which I don't know Clooney. I'm just
we all know Clooney.
But he said, he thought like he was the ER, he did ER. And he was like, you know, then he became like this huge movie star. And then he just gradually became the biggest thing. And he said in an interview, which I think he shared the interview with Julia Roberts, who also was a mega star. And his point was he thought that when he made it, that there was a golden domed room of gilded scripts. And once he became a movie star, those would all be,
the floodgates would open, right?
That would be for him. He could just pick and choose. And then what he realized was that, well, Leo wants it and Brad wants it and everybody else wants it. And then they don't audition anymore. And so now it becomes a bit of a political game and there aren't that many really, really good scripts around. And so even for those people at what we consider to be the height of stardom, they have their own anxieties and they have their own problems.
It's everywhere.
With, on a Fox series with Kevin Bacon. And he and I sort of lived in the same neighborhood in New York. And it was great. It was great to see him. And that he's Kevin Bacon. And one time, as an aside, you know, we were just kind of sitting talking while they're setting up a shot and talking about his career. And the thing that resonated with me, he said, yeah, it's kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know, meaning, you know, there's more stuff coming, hopefully, you know what I mean? And then he's really going to, you know, and he's really
going
to hit. Whereas to me, it's like, that is the kind of career that I aspire to, that every actor aspires to, all these iconic movies and these great performances, you know, and like he plays music and he's like, he's just an involved guy. And you're kind of like, if that guy is waiting for the other shoe to drop, then I need to be grateful for what I have.
Of course. Well, you said, hang on, you said, I want to go back a little bit because you said something about those moments where you just want to get your rent and those meals and this and that. You probably had them pre-med, right? You probably had those feelings. Did you have any of those after Ed lasted 4 years? And were there any of those times where you were like, oh, I got to get back to work. Especially when you have a family, I guess that's a dumb question really, because you always have to kind of work when you have four kids.
Yeah. You always, I think there's a thing that you never look back, or at least I don't look back. You're always like, you're focused on the thing that's coming. And if you've done anything good, it doesn't matter. There's a Billie Holiday line, once ain't for always and two ain't but twice. Meaning like you may have done something, but that means nothing. You know what I mean? What's the Babe Ruth quote?
I hate that. I hate that, what you just said. Say that again.
Once ain't for always and two ain't but twice. But here's why it's good. Here's why it's
okay.
Good. If you screw up, this is part of the idea. There'd been a guy who wrote an article in the New Yorker, which is like basically like he'd been a war hero, but also he'd done something awful. And the idea behind it was like, we're all going to screw up. And when you screw up, the important thing is to remember that that doesn't make you a screw up. You know, and if you've done something great, it doesn't make you a great person. You know, Babe Ruth had this quote yesterday.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yesterday's home runs don't win today's games. Right. And so I think that's a massive part of not only is it, I think, a healthy thing to like to stay humble, but also I think for what we do, if you think, yeah, I've got it, that's death a little bit, you know?
Yeah, you lose your drive, maybe. You're the eye on the prize.
You want to be, like, nobody cares about what you've done in the past when you're doing the scene now. This scene now has to be done well. And, you know, if you don't nail it, you feel badly a little bit. And that, you know, that's that ongoing challenge is the thing that's going to keep you sharp a little bit, as opposed to like complacency, which is going to kill you. So yeah, I mean, I, being Canadian first, I didn't have the advantages of, you know, for an American person, they can go audition, but for a Canadian person, they have to cross over the border, and then they have to like audition. And then if they get it, they have to show papers, and there's a massive thing to overcome. And so part of the thing, just to play at the level that you're playing at, was there's a struggle to get there. So that's a leap of faith. And once you get that, then it's like, well, I hope I can keep with it. And if you get fortunate enough to do something like Ed, like that came after like a decade's worth of doing musical theater and Canadian television. And what was interesting about that is nobody knows what you're doing when you're doing at least back in the day when I was doing, it's different now, but when I was doing Canadian television series, nobody would watch them. They were all watching Friends. And what was good about that was you still did the same daily that you do, that I do, when you go to do a television show now. It's still, there's the grip setting up the stuff. There's the juicers, there's the electrics, there's the camera guy setting the track. There's like all that stuff, right? Everyone's doing their job, and it's the exact same regardless of whether somebody watches it or doesn't watch it. And it gets you into this mindset that this is what matters. This is important to do this scene well. So by the time you get something like a decade later, you get something like Ed, you're like, all right, well, we're not reading reviews. We're just trying to do this thing well. And then when that show ends and you're doing something else and nobody wants you anymore, you're like, yeah, I know what that is. I got right. You got to scramble and fight. You know, I worked, the show I did after Ed was a show with Jason Priestley, who had been this supernova star for the younger viewers here for your show, like on 90210. And he'd been as big as you could get. And then after that, people said, well, you did that guy, you did Brandon, now we don't want you. And he just had to like stay humble, work hard. He became a really talented and able director. You know, he just like, I'm going to go fight for roles. And that's what he said. It's like, people are all like, well, we're happy to have you. And then when he would go out, when we would walk around, we shot in New York, when we'd walk around, everybody wanted a piece. And he always had time for people.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, that's just great. It's like Cal Ripken signing every autograph while he's doing the streets. He's like, look, you know, you need to be grateful for what you have, which sounds trickier than it is, I think.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
I saw a video of you talking about you were at a convention and you were going to race your fans and you I love my fans. Like, people are like, you know, I'm a fan. If you saw my room, it's just like posters of autographs I've talked about. Yeah. So when I go to cons, people don't realize I used to go to cons before I was anybody. I used to go to horror cons, like New Jersey Horror Fest or whatever, Fright Fest, and meet Flyboy, the guy in, Dawn of the Dead, you know, and the guy in the helicopter, and like, oh my God, his autograph's $10. I gotta go get it signed. So when I hear about this, I go there and I really enjoy I feel like they're friends. They're like, they sort of get it and they know me. And it's like, I'm finally the cool guy, maybe, even though I'm not. Like, high school, I was never the cool guy. So when I go there, I'm like, hey, I belong here with these folks. This is cool. So do you feel like, I feel like you're also a fan in a way, but you just like the way you handle your fans. And I think you seem like you really enjoy it.
Yeah. I think a lot of it comes from, I know I keep repeating myself, but it's like, we're, you know, you're grateful. You're fortunate I feel fortunate to be in the position. I think that it's a, I think it's a massive thing to have. Like, there was this Flyboy back in the day was like a niche thing. And now if you go to San Diego Comic-Con, you know, that's general knowledge and accepted as like, it's part of the mainstream, right, in a good way. It's not comic books in a bedroom. It's like, this is the golden age of this thing. You know what I mean? And you do stuff where you're part of that. You're part of that.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. That's incredible to be part of a golden age of anything, I think. And maybe not even, the golden age might be like 20 years down the line. Who knows? But yeah, there's an element to the fact that the cons are not for they're for the uninformed and the informed nowadays. You know, it's just like, it's mass entertainment. And if you get to be one of those guys like that, you go into Hall H and everyone's cheering for you because everybody knows you, because, you know, you share sort of the same, you share the same ideologies as the people in the stands. That makes you, first off, not cool. And cool is a myth, right? It's just like, great. You don't want to spend any time doing that. You just want to jump in and enjoy the life that you're given. And that's part of be uncool. Jump in there.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, it's never lost that, like, look, the reason like The Flash is a popular show on CW is because of these people. It's like, it's such simple.
It really
it's
is
so simple, right? It's just like,
yeah.
And again, I have the benefit of being on canceled show after canceled show after canceled
I've
show
been
after
there.
Canceled show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, I've been on a show where I was like, I was supposed to go promote the show for its third episode. And I was on, this is another name drop, Conan O'Brien. And there's a knock on the door and it's the producer, third episode, about to do Conan to promote the show. And, you know, it's Michael Rausch, the producer, showrunner, who's like, hey, they pulled us. You know what I mean? And, you know,
wow.
That's Hollywood. They're not your friends. Like, well, before we went on to...
Wait a minute. You're about to do Conan and they told you this?
Correct.
That's how you found out before you went on air?
Correct.
Who would tell you that?
Well, I'm glad they told me so I didn't go promote a show that had been yanked. Great. This is a great, yeah, this is a great Hollywood story, because on the surface, it just seems so mean, right?
Right.
But nobody's, well, my experience is nobody's really no one's vindictive. They're not out to get you.
Right.
It's a numbers game, you know, like you can help them, you know, and, or you can't help them. You know what I mean? And it's just like, they're like, is Michael going to be a good announcement? Are we happy to have him? Like, there's a lot of things like, oh, you can help us. So good. So we want to get Michael. Or it's like, yeah, you know, he's not going to help us.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, one of the best advice you can give anybody is like, don't take it personally in, you know, in the entertainment world.
It's hard when you're sensitive. I'm sensitive.
Sure. You will take it personally.
Yeah.
Your heart will be broken.
You have to learn. You have to learn how to deal with that. Yeah, of course.
You'll be crushed. But there's a difference between having a thing that you love taken from you. You know, when I say a thing you love, I mean, you know, like, you know, your job, you know, having that taken from you versus having someone take that job from you to purposefully hurt you.
Right.
Which is my experience is that everyone's just, These executives who are doing that, they're scrambling
for
themselves.
It's all out of fear. It's all out of, what am I going to do? I don't know what to do. I'm listening to you.
They're
all
trying to keep their own station, stay alive. And if that means cutting your show before you
right.
go on to promote it on Conan. Then, well, that was a...
What do you... Now, honestly, now what I would have probably done, it was like going, hey, actually, I just backstage heard that the show got canceled. So isn't that a great time? So, hey, I mean, what did you do?
Well... You know, I was there and I was only there to promote that show. And even though this podcast is going to make it seem like I love talking about myself, I don't.
You're the guest. Look, you know how many times I've heard Tom? You know how many times I've heard, oh, he was talking over the guest. Let the guest talk. I'm like, dude, it's an hour. Sometimes I do talk over. Fuck.
Yeah.
You know, but like, you're the guest, so they want you to talk. But I talk enough. Believe
me.
Fuck.
I know the deal. This podcast will be the end of your podcast. I was, that's it. I couldn't stand it anymore. I had to listen to one more actor talk. I just turned them off.
No, this is all so interesting. Go, go.
So this stuff, because I don't like talking about myself, and because I'd done a few television shows up to that point, I had Conan worked for NBC and I worked for NBC. And so we crossed paths a number of times. We lived in the same neighborhood. He's, you know, he's so very talented. I'm sure you know this and people know this, but.
Oh, I was on Conan before.
Yeah. He's so quick.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
funny. He's quick. He's Harvard educated. He's humble. He's got all those incredible things together. And so he understood when I had done his show before, I was like, I don't like talking about me. And so we would come up with some kind of gag or some kind of prank that I pulled on the show. And he would air it. At one point I showed him how to browse like a craft service table. That was a segment that we did. Ended up with somebody getting shot. I can't remember, but you know, he was like, you want to do comedy? Let's do comedy. Like he was game for it.
That's cool.
It was incredible.
You know, go ahead.
We were doing that thing and we were going to promote the show and I'm ready to go. And then there's the knock on the door. And I think it's the segment producer. As you know, that's the person who comes in and goes like, hey, Michael, so remember, we're just going to talk about this, and going to walk you out to the stage. And there's a knock on the door. And I think it's the segment producer, but it's Michael Roush, the showrunner. And Michael goes, so they pulled us. I'll never forget the intonation. I'll never forget the words verbatim. He goes, so they pulled us. And we stare at each other. We're in the green room staring at each other. And then he kind of closes the door. We're kind of looking at each other. And it's a knock. And literally, I'm supposed to go, you know. And this time, it's not the segment producer. It's Conan. And Conan goes, I just heard. And I'm like, yeah. And he says, and this is like one of those like action movies where it's like 30, 29, 28. And he's like, I totally get it if you don't want to go on, but you're a double and I got nothing else. A double means like, we're going to do a thing. We're going to go to commercial break and then we're going to come back and I'm going to talk to you again.
I've never been a double. I'm a single. Get out.
And I'm like, no, I'll go. And he's okay, good. And then they're rushing us out there and it's like, 5, 4. He's like, can you talk about what just happened? I was like, better not. I don't know what I would say. That might be really, really bad. He's like, yeah. Okay. And literally he's like, 2. And Conan's there. He's like, hey, welcome back. And he's like, hey, everybody. He's like, I'm here with Tom Cavanaugh. So you bike, right? And he goes, the thing just sails by
right.
because he's so funny and he's so quick and nobody would ever have known. And then that summer I was doing Year in Town. He's like, hey, come back on the show. And he's like, now can we talk about it? And I'm like, yeah, now we can talk about it.
Wow.
So on that thing, it was the last time Tom was here.
Perfect.
He told the story and people in the audience were like,
oh yeah. So I was.
Because he was like, that's Hollywood, you know? And yet, even though it's like the most Hollywood kind of bad Hollywood right. story I have, there's no intent, like I say, there's no intent of evil behind it.
How many seasons did you do?
That was our third episode.
Just 3 episodes in?
Yep.
And what was it called?
Love Monkey.
Well, I mean, that's just effed. 3 episodes? How do you know anything?
Well,
did you ever hear about Seinfeld? You give things a chance.
This is the thing, though. I remember a friend of mine did a show called, like, I had 2 friends, and they both did shows that were, like, on, and Love Monkey was the same thing. It was on every, so I live in New York. It was on every bus, every taxi cab, and it was, like, they loved it. We shot a full season, and it, as you know, but maybe people who are listening don't know, we shoot so many episodes before we ever air them. And so, for a while, the only barometer you have is it good when it lands on your desk? And so, you know, I think that show, we were finding our way, but there was something ephemeral about Judy Greer was in the cast, Jason Priestley, Chris Weil, Lawrence Tate. There were such talented human beings in that show that there was something ephemeral that translated from that to the screen. And we were finding out how to capture it. And I think the reaction from the network was like, this is great. You know, I think they really did enjoy it. It was an hour long. That's trouble one about an A&R music guy in New York City. So it wasn't blood and semen for your hour long, you know, it wasn't like murder. It was just like, you know, it was human drama. And I think that's a big problem on a big network. And again, like I say, not to offer excuses, but that's an hour of time. And if you can put CSI on and double the numbers, you're probably going to do that. But they were taking a shot with trying to make the network a little younger, a little hipper, a little New York cool, a little A&R, all that kind of stuff. A little bit of sex, a little bit of that kind of stuff. And so you can't blame them for taking a foray to try and be more competitive with the cool factor that at the time NBC and Fox and those.
Sure.
Those
networks had. I get. Yeah.
So they were doing that. But then what's interesting is Emily, the Reasons Why Not, and then the Michael Malley show had happened just prior to that. And what's interesting is they were plastered on every bus as well. And you'll probably remember this because you were doing stuff at the time. They were like the new big thing.
Yep.
And the amount of money that got sunk into, you know, the advertising budget was astounding. And up until those moments, in my experience anyway, bridging both the, you know, the analog and the digital of all this kind of stuff, there was a thing where, like, if you put that much money into promotion, then you had to go with the show. And so famously, shows like Cheers and Seinfeld and Friends that didn't perform well but had been promoted, they're like, look, you can't just yank it off the air. Why? Because we'll look silly. And so they gave them enough time, and they had champions, Tartikoff and so on, who were like, no, this thing is good.
Right.
I put it on my desk. I did the litmus test. The barometer was, it showed up on my desk and it looks good. So we're going to stay with it for a little bit. But with Michael Malley and with Emily's Reasons Why Not, when they didn't perform numbers-wise to what they'd hoped they would get because of promotion, they took them off the air immediately. I think it was like one episode or two episodes at the time, and there was no penalty.
Right.
There was no backlash penalty to the networks, and I think that became, that's an MO then. If we can take them off and put it on CSI and nobody's going to, there's not going to be any backlash, then that's just what we're going to do.
Well, you have a very cerebral way of thinking about these things. Now, I don't know if you do it retrospectively. Like, if we look back at the younger Tom Cavanaugh and go, no, he was fucking pissed. The girl he was dating, or his wife at the time, whatever, was she like, oh my God, remember how upset you were? You were smoking pot constantly. You were drinking a bunch of shit. You were, and now you look at you and you're like, yeah, was it the same mentality, or was there a part of that where you're like flipping out?
I think that it was less. You know, I'd howl at the moon, of course.
Less pot smoking, less drinking.
It was just a lot more heartbreak.
Yeah.
You know? It was like, that was the thing mostly. It wasn't so much like, you fucking guys. It was more like, oh, I really like, because you know how it is. I really like acting with you. And I'm hoping that we can do this for a long time.
Yeah.
And then it gets yanked away.
Yeah.
And part of the reason that makes it so special, acting with you, is because I know it can be yanked away. Mm-hmm. And what you hope is that it won't be yanked away. And when it does get yanked away, even though, hey, we got to get together, hey, we got to, that never happens. If you're fortunate, you take one or two people from each show and you stay with them. But your intentions are great, but everyone else has to go make a living, try and find another job, and go on and do that. And so there's heartbreak, because the reality is, the thing that you love and the people that you love, you're just not going to see them anymore. And that's the biggest thing. The other thing is, and this is the silver lining, or the golden part of it, is like, you know what? That door closing is, all right, what am I going to do next? Like, what could come next?
Well, you know something that, look at The Flash. I mean, for instance, I mean, how many years since you came on? I mean, you came in 6 years ago.
Yeah.
You didn't think you were going to even be on the series that long, right? It was just like a introduction of a character. Did you think you were going to be on this long? No, of course not.
No. It's interesting you know that. I didn't know that you knew that. But yeah, like, there was, it felt like after season one, it was Flash versus Reverse Flash. And I thought that this is just, and again, I know I'm talking about myself so much, but Greg Berlanti, who's like Hollywood's golden boy, Uber producer, he's just tremendous. He's one of the great human beings that I've ever worked with. You know, I remember like Bill Lawrence, Michael Roush, and Rob Burnett. These guys are showrunners of shows that I've done. And I've been really fortunate to work with people who are like great humans. Like, they're intelligent, they're smart, they have perspective. Bill Lawrence is one of the guys who, his little quote was like, you can't take it personally. you know.
Scrubs, right? He was one of the creators.
You're the guy that did like Spin City and Scrubs. And he's like, they're not going to put the show on. He's like, you can never take it personally. And you pick up stuff like that. And so, you know, Greg is so impressive because of his integrity. And I think most people who work on his shows can go like, yeah, it's rare that you meet someone who's so committed to doing the right thing. And back a long time ago, you know, there was a couple of things. I went in for a show of his and he wanted me for one of the leads and I didn't do it. And I thought, well, that'll be it. That'll be it for him and I. And he said, well, as I walked out after saying no, his words, he was like, well, I'm not going anywhere. Meaning he's going to be around and do other shows. But I was like, that'll be it. Cause I didn't do this show. And then a little while later, he did this show called Jack and Bobby, which lasted a season, and called me up and said, hey, do you want to play this guy who rages at the moon and has got like looks like a drug problem or an alcohol problem. And like, he's got more things going on than that, complicated character. And, that was Eli Stone. Sorry, Jack and Bobby was a gay cocaine addicted brother to Christine Lottie. And, you know, at the time people were like, Tom's a nice guy. So, but Greg would pick me for these like challenging roles and offer that to me. And I was like, this is an honor to have him think that I could do this. And that show only lasted a year. And then the next one, the guy Raging at the Moon, was Eli Stone. Again, he called. And it's one of those guys who, it's stunning to get a call.
He was in your corner. Everyone needs that guy. He's just always been in your corner. He always sees.
And it's so rare.
Yeah, rare. So rare. Yeah.
So rare, as you know, to have someone go like, because once they've done one thing with you, they're like, that's it.
That's what you always think. If I turn down something or if like, yeah, you're like, oh my God, I remember I did this pilot. I'm not going to say the guy's name, but big director. I did a pilot. He says, listen, if you do this pilot for me, I'm going to put you in all my movies. I want you to do this role. And I ended up doing it. And the pilot didn't get picked up. It's been 20 years. I mean, like, that's the reality. But then there are other guys like Eric Tannenbaum, he's a big producer who produced Two and a Half Men. And, you know, he's a not creator, but one of the main producers on that show. But he sent me the script and goes, hey, I want you to do this. And I just was like, it's just not for me. I don't want to do that. And I just didn't want to do that role. And then I was like, that's it. I'll never call back. And then he did. We did a show called Imposter for 2 years. And he believed me. He's like, listen, you're this guy. You have to do this. And we talked about it and we did it. And so you're right. It is rare when they come back. Usually they get, it's almost like you get one show. Oh, that producer hates me now. I didn't do the role for him. You always feel that, but it's a rare occasion. So that's nice.
It's very, very rare. And to have somebody who's as prolific and committed as Greg believe in you is amazing. And so when we first started The Flash together, obviously it had a modicum of cachet because they'd done Arrow and Arrow had done well, but you just never know. And like, you expect, you know, the knock on the thing, like, hey, they pulled us. And Greg, I think people forget, had come from that, you know, Jack and Bobby once, he'd done a lot of things that didn't say this guy's going to become the biggest, you know, producer of all time. And so, and he stayed humble through it. When we started Flash very early on, you know, in my head, we would be canceled by October because that's just been the experience. Like, we'll do 7 and then 7 to 13 and that'll be it.
And your wife was probably saying like, what do you think? And you're like, yeah, I'll probably do this and that'll be it. That's what I'm counting on. Right.
She was starting a thing called the Players Tribune. She's a creative director of the Players Tribune for your sports fans out there, which is, the Derek Jeter, branded, site that talks about the story of the athlete in their own words. And it's tremendous. You know, it's where Steve Nash announced his retirement. Yeah. Kobe Bryant is one of it, was always on the board. It's a great site with integrity, because instead of EW interviewing you about your story as an actor, you write it out yourself, you know. And
what's that noise?
But that's a garbage truck.
Oh, is that what that is?
It's essential.
I was like, my OCD was like, what is that? The sound.
because Jeter was finishing off his time with the Yankees and it was a digital startup, you know, both of them were like, there's about four people that started up. They're like, well, we'll be done in like 2 months. That'll be it. And we were starting the Flash and I was like, well, we'll be done in October. That'll be it. And because that's largely the story. And very early on, we had a, we had a couple of things that happened really quickly. We introduced like some big names on the show. And I remember saying to Greg, are we all worried about story? Because we were just like flopping all this stuff out. And he was like, there's always more story. And his intent was like, look, I love The Flash. And if it gets canceled, like so much stuff, I just want to have that DVD on my desk, which dates Greg. But it's like, when I have that DVD on my desk to say I did it. And so season one was such a simple and clean thing where Flash, his mother is killed by the villain and he needs to confront the villain. And it just, and who is the villain? And I was in a wheelchair and I was the villain, but you didn't really know. And then it got in, the layers of the onion got peeled out. And then at the end, it was like Flash fights Reverse Flash, end of season one. And it was like crisp and clean storytelling. I thought that the cast gelled well and did a good job telling that story. And it's very difficult, as you know. It's like, well, we did it. And then it's like, oh, wait, now they want more. And so even though, you know, I think a lot of like producers and writers sound confident, I've been in that thing where you're writing something, you're like, I don't know. I remember on Ed, Rob Burnett said, we're bringing your parents in. It was around episode 10, because like, we got nothing else. You know, he's like, so we got to bring the parents in because we got no others. We don't know what we're at. You know what I mean? And that show lasted four more years. It's like, it's
right.
That can be a daunting thing for people who are trying to tell the story. And so.
So when did you know? When did they? When
so
they,
once we finished that verse last, I thought like, well, that's it. You know, because you can't have him every four episodes going like, you'll never get me, Flash.
Right.
You just can't do that. You can't repeat that. You have to like, good storytelling is like, you want to invent some new stuff. And so I thought, well, that's it for me. But then Greg and I had this idea of like, what if, because it's in our thing, there's a multiverse, which is, there's many different versions of Michael. We thought, well, what if we could create a different guy every season? And then as an actor, you're like, and still be the Reverse Flash when we need to be the
Dr. Harrison Wells.
So it ended up being like, you know, such an incredible.
What a run.
It's incredible. That kind of thing almost never happens where you get to like, as an actor, it's a dream to create more than one character. If you're fortunate enough to be on a long running show and Flash has turned out to be that, then largely you're playing the same person to be able to reinvent, but also play the arch enemy.
Speaking of which, before I got some shit talking questions from my Patreon, and I'm gonna let you go because I don't want to ever do long. I love this. I could go this forever. Can you just play the French version, the Sherlock?
Sherlock, that's not. You're not doing it right.
I know. I didn't try.
No, you pronounce Sherlock, but it's Sherlock. Sure. So that's a gag that we do the whole time. So, and we started doing that one. Come up with the idea that, well, this guy. Everybody pronounced the name wrong, but then the girl that he loves, she's the only one that pronounced it right. So that's what we did, Sherlock. And then every time somebody say, the very first time we did this, by the way, this gag, the actors, so I come up with these things, and the actors never know what's going to happen. And the very first time we did it, the line was just like something like Danielle Panabaker had to go like, okay, Sherlock, and then that's it. But I corrected her while the camera was running. I'm like, she's like, so Sherlock, I'm like, look. She's like, look. Look, Sherlock, Sherlock, look, 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 Sherlock, Sherlock. And so when you know me, I can do that all day. That gag doesn't get old. It's funny, 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 then really not funny, then really not funny, then kind of really funny, then concerned, then fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That to me, that humor, I love that. And so that became a running gag. Anytime anyone, while the camera was running or while the camera wasn't running, said that character's name, I would correct them. So there you go. I've done that for your patron people.
I love that. All right. So here it is. This is just some questions from patrons. There's just a couple questions. Spitfire. So you answer them quickly. We just do it. Here we go. Shit talking. Samantha M., do you prefer playing a good version of Harrison Wells or an evil version?
Evil. Thank you.
Of course, evil.
Of course. You understand that.
Yeah, I like playing evil. Although, Lex, I had to play good for quite a while until I finally got the flip out. And that was really fun. Mark A., could we hear, and then I got to talk like this a lot. Mark A., could we hear about your time on Bang Bang, You're Dead? Always thought it was underrated, and sadly, the movie only becomes more relevant.
Yeah, for the people that don't know, so that's like, that's not Spitfire. That's basically like about, but as quickly as I can do, you can't do a Spitfire thing about gun violence.
Yeah,
but, I
mean, yeah, Mark.
It's bad.
Come on,
bad.
Mark.
It's bad. No, that thing was like one of those, you know those things that you're like, rarely do you feel like you're ever contributing to society. you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
That was one of those jobs where it was like, okay, you know, the William Mastroianni who wrote the play, and then they made the movie of it. Their intent was to get this into school curriculum and not make any money off this thing ever. And essentially, it's told from the perspective of children who've lost their lives in school shootings and what they've given up and what they don't have anymore. It's heartbreaking. It's important. I'm not going to be able to spitfire a good answer for this, except that sometimes you're so fortunate enough to do something you think is worthy. And for those people that don't know, go read Bang Bang You're Dead, or go look up Bang Bang You're Dead, or watch Bang Bang You're Dead, because like this person said, it's sadly so much part of the dialogue these days, and we so wish it wasn't, but hopefully anybody that could look at this can see why we feel the way we do.
Robert B., can you recall a memory of one of the hardest days you've had working on the Flash set? Could you not just like, I can't do it. I can't finish this. I'm exhausted. My mind. He didn't say
this is easy. And you can actually, there's dailies that are great. So one of the characters I play, Harry Wells, is running with his rifle through the woods and being chased by a giant gorilla, Grodd. I had been up all that night vomiting. My whole family was sick with stomach flu. And after like throwing up from 4 or 5 a.m., I had a 6 a.m. pickup. I was like, I can't go into work. And then he was like, it's raining. It's pouring rain in Vancouver in Stanley Park. And there's 185 people waiting on you. Yeah, you're going. And so I went, and you can literally see in the dailies, cut. And then I run behind a tree and throw up.
Whoa.
You know, it was one of those things. Like, we're doing stunts. I was diving over logs, and they're like, cut. Bleh. So there you have it.
There you go, Robert. Lisa, the multiple personalities / versions of Wells is my favorite character in The Flash. Okay, that kind of made sense. What has it been like portraying all the personalities, and your favorite version of Wells is Sherlock? Right? Sherlock.
Sherlock is Sherlock. You're doing it wrong.
Sherlock.
Okay. So there's H.R. Wells, and he's kind of like, you know, if you know who Owen Wilson is, he's kind of like that. He loves you, man. You're amazing. The Flash is so fast, bro. So that guy's great. And then there's Harry, who hates everybody. Antisocial, heart of gold. That's fun to do. The Sherlock is great. The Sonny Wolf, X me on Dawn. I'm unbelievable. There's Herr Wells, who's also good, but kind of, you know, he's German, right? And so there's a whole bunch of them, and there's no favorite. You know, the person that I'm, the reason I'm there is the guy that wears the yellow suit. So that's my favorite thing to do, play the Reverse Flash. And then after that, when we start doing, I think there's 19 versions of Wells, which is shameless to say. But this is the line that I use, but it really is true. The guy that I'm doing that day, the Aussie Wells, oh, he ate all our petrol. You know, whatever, it doesn't matter. Sonny Wells, how you doing? The guy that I'm doing that day is the guy that I love doing.
Leanne P., have you ever taken up any new hobbies now with the quarantine?
Ukulele.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Ooh, that's cool.
Ukulele is like, I encourage your patrons to, it's conquerable.
Pick up the ukulele, folks. Emily asks, who would be the one actor you'd love to work with that you haven't?
Michael, my host, podcast host.
Michael Ian Black. Well, hang on. Right, perfect timing. So I emailed him last night. I said, if you want to say something.
Oh, no way. Is he on there right now?
Hi, Tom. Michael Ian Black here with a quick shout-out to one of my dear friends, Tom Cavanaugh from Canada.
That's it.
Can I tell you, he's got this great runner that he does. So we do a podcast together. Our own. Do you know our podcast?
Yeah. About this? Yeah. Tom and Mike eat chips, right?
Yeah. Mike and Tom eat snacks.
Snacks.
Mates. Yeah. Which became, this is the thing you'll love. You know him. His favorite part of, we did a television show together. His favorite part of the television show
Phil.
Was lunch. He loved doing lunch. And we're like, what? You know that thing? We're like, how can we work together again? Like, you know, it's so hard. And we're like, well, we could gather and do what we always did and just record it. And then we get to be together. So that was the whole thing. And so his runner on this podcast is that he's convinced that I play the Flash. And I refuse to correct him. He's like, how's it like doing the Flash? It's great. He, as you know,
he's a genius.
I think he's our first link, you and me.
Yeah, that's where we met. Cheers to Michael Ian Black. Funny ass man. Look him up. You know him. You'll be like, who? Then look him up and you've seen him in everything. He's a genius. I love the guy. Rachin. I'm going to mess her name up. When you're playing a character who is so far removed from who you fundamentally are, do you look for inspiration in others who behave this way, or do you try to empathize and find something in them you can relate to?
don't understand that.
I don't either. Let's skip it. Let's skip it.
I get it. It's like, you know that thing? It's like, yeah, that's the job, you know, act. So we've all got like rage and anger and all the emotions that you need to play any kind of character. We've got goodness. So you just like, you tap into that. We love that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
We do. Judith D, I could answer this question if Tom doesn't want to, because I can guess it. Do you have any input into the different versions of Harrison Wells? It feels like they let you do whatever you want, and I love it.
That's pretty much exactly it.
That is it. And you know what?
I remember saying to Todd Helbing, is like, what if he was like, you know, he was like, what if, like, we were pitching the Sherlock thing, and I was always like, but what if he's French? And he's like, I'm like, what would that be like? He's like, it would be like this. And he's like, all right.
That's amazing.
The thing is that once you've done it long enough, they're like, you're going to be indulgent, but you're trying to help the show, you know, not hurt the show. So I think that, you know.
Man, look, Tom, I love this, man. I haven't seen you in so long, but you're so easy to talk to, and you're so insightful, and the stories are just impactful, and you're just such a good guy, and I know that you're doing so well with The Flash, and you deserve it. I love seeing the good guys win, and you know, I hope maybe you could promise me at the end of next season you'll come back and talk about stuff.
I'll talk to you anytime.
Seriously,
Michael, Ian Black's backyard. You're fantastic. I think the world of you. I thank you for those kind of I think you and I we don't compliment well. It's very nice of you to say that, and I appreciate it. I appreciate you. I'll talk to you anytime, my friend.
Well, you guys heard that. Tom Cavanaugh, thank you for allowing me to be inside of you. That's something we say. I say.
Thank you, Michael.
I appreciate it. I'll send you a mug, maybe. You want a mug? They're really cool mugs.
Oh, yes.
They're good mugs.
No, yes.
Hold on. Stay there.
Straight out, yes.
There it is. Look at that. So it says,
yeah.
Inside of you, Michael.
Look, then,
thank you for allowing me to be inside of you. See that?
That's a nice little
mug. It's a nice little mug.
Too.
I'll send you one.
Oh. And a good size too, like not too high. Like that's great.
Right, it's a good mug.
I'm appreciative.
One of your kids is going to go, "What is this, Dad? Thank you for allowing me to be inside of you. What the hell is it?" It's some podcast I did. I promise this guy I do his podcast again. It's not going to happen, dude. I love you, buddy. Thanks so much for coming on, and good luck with everything, and be safe and healthy and happy.
Good talk.
All right, buddy.
All right, brother.
There you have it. Great guy, right? Really good dude. And you know, I like when people are so forthcoming and open, and it's not always easy. It's not easy to get guests too. It's hard. I do all of them on my own. I get every guest that you've heard is 99% is because I just call someone who knows so-and-so, and you know, I think they're skeptical usually, and then they do it and they like it, which makes me feel good, because I want people to enjoy the show. I want people that are my guests to enjoy the show. That's why I've had Dane Cook a few times, and McNamara, and Stephen Amell, and Tom Welling, and Zach Levi, and it's nice, it's not that I try to make my show different. I just don't listen to other podcasts, not because I just don't want to be influenced in a certain way. I just want to do what I do, and if people like it, they like it. I just want to talk to people openly, candidly, as you know. And thanks again to my sponsors. Really great stuff. Fair Harbor and Feels. Obviously, when the advertisers do well, they like me and they stay on board. These guys have a lot of quality stuff, so you might want to check out Feels. Helps me sleep, that CBD stuff. And Fair Harbor, I wear these shorts. I'm wearing them now. I mean, every day. I don't know how many times I have to tell you. All right, here's the folks that really support the podcast. There's some of them, and they do it in a major way. And I wouldn't do it or wouldn't be able to do it without you guys. So thank you a million times. Nancy D, Mary B, Leah S, Trisha F, Sarah V, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Lauren G, Nico P, Barry L. Although I always say that, but it's Barry I, isn't it? Sue me, Barry. Come on, Barry. You're the only Barry. Can I just say Barry? Angelina G. Lee, Jerry Wood, Kevin R, Emily K, Bob B, Robert B, Jason W, Kristen K, Amelia O, Allison L, Jason D, Raj. Raj. He's a patron on both patrons I have. The horror one, too. Many of these folks are. Joshua D, Emily S, CJP, Samantha M, Hamza B, Jennifer B, Stacy B, Carly T, Reem, Jennifer S, Janelle B, Tabitha C, Kimberly E, Melissa C, Mike E, Jake M, Marissa N, Nanirelo, Jack Slater, Judith D, Ramira, Beth B, Chris F, Sarah F, Chad W, Leanne P, Darla, we're almost done, Darla W, Jackie P, Rodrigo S, Ration C, Ray A, Maya P, Megan D, Demario, Jennifer C, Maddie S, Tiffany L, Kendrick F, Ashley E, Kelly W, Margie M, Sigourney P, hi, Tom T, Matt W, and Belinda N. So there you go. There are the patrons. Thanks again. Please tell everybody to subscribe. And here's a little fan letter I'll leave with you. And I thought this was kind of sweet. They're always sweet. And look, they had a picture there. You can almost picture the person that I met at a convention. All right, this is from Rosemary. I never listened to podcasts before until the beginning of last year. I kept seeing on Michael's social media pages about it. And I finally had a day to check it out, and I was hooked. His podcast has helped me get through a really tough time, especially since I was in an abusive relationship. And some of the guests have gone through the same thing. It made me feel better knowing that I'm not the only one who's been in that situation, too. I don't like even talking about it either because of how emotional it is, especially for me. God, I'm crying, too, while I'm writing this email. Don't cry. Besides that, I can also relate to Michael, especially when he talked about losing his grandpa on Thanksgiving last year, too. And it goes on. I just wanted to share some of that. Obviously, she's been through a lot. Rosemary, we're with you. It's all how we deal with it, isn't it? It's all how the people around us rise to the occasion. And that's when you really know who your friends are, the people that are always trying to get into your life and stay in your life, more importantly, stay in your life. Obviously, people are trying to get into your life. That's kind of weird if you don't know them, right? But Rosemary, there's a lot of love. I give you a lot of love, you know. And again, I'm not a physician, so I just try to speak from the heart and talk to my guests, and hopefully you obviously got something out of it, and that means the world. So thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you have a great week. So many great guests coming up. Kevin Conroy down the road. You know, Batman, Justice League Unlimited. So stick around, man. Keep looking. We also have, I might just interview the Justice League Unlimited, the whole cast. Might happen. Also, a reminder, make sure you go to YouTube and subscribe on the Inside of You podcast on YouTube. I'm trying to get those listens up and those views, and you get to watch it. And so that's a lot of fun. So there you go. So, hey, thank you. Thanks to my producer, Bryce, who is so fun to work with and easy to work with and really helps me out. I'm alone, man. I'm alone here. I don't have a wife or anything. And Ryan, who does all the edits, he's fantastic, and I miss him. All right. Love you guys. Remember the patrons. Inside of You Patreon, just go to patreon.com and look for Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. And also on Patreon, Where Have All the Good Horror Movies Gone with John Heater and myself, talking about horror movies, and it's a lot of fun. Inside of You online store. My favorite charities, don't forget those. We just raised a bundle of money for the Ronald McDonald House. Thank you, Tom Welling. Thank you, Kristen Krug. Thank you, Amaze. Thank you, Amy Mallon. I love that we made so much money for them. And families still need food and support. I just donated a dinner to them last week. So it's nice. And I hope foodonfoot.org, helping the homeless, best organization out there. So thank you, Echoes of Hope, Animal Rescue Mission. For saving animals. Hugs and Kisses. My uncle Warren has a wonderful foundation. You can also listen to him if you want to listen. And he has the pet show. Tell him I sent you. And he's fantastic. Heart of gold, man. Heart of gold. He loved to live just on an island with animals. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of you out there. There's my Warriors vest from the movie over there. You can't see it maybe in the wide shot. Thank you for the gifts, too. You know, I get gifts and things. I have the Left on Laurel embroidered thing over there. People send me some cool stuff. And Patreons, your merch boxes are on the way. Every 4 months, they get a big box from me. And so all that stuff. I think that's about it. All right.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.